we're actually in studio because we go to studio. Rare stop at the building. We're back on the road tomorrow. Circle Las Vegas at Stadium Swim. And then Friday, we close out the week at TI, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. Nye is in. Nye Zaragoza is here with us. What's happening?
What's happening? It's been a minute.
We got a lot to get to.
So
you're coming into a loaded show today. We got a lot of good guest spots. Plenty of UNLV football talk. I actually left the opening block of the show open for a couple of things that I'm thinking of. One, tomorrow night is big for me, and this is what I kind of dread. I like, as a Jets fan, to be buried amongst the games on Sunday. I don't like being in primetime. Now, we get to watch the games for free. Not really, but free as a Jets fan. I say we, Jets, right? So that is a cool thing, but that national stage can be pretty, pretty nasty. And, you know, the Jets tomorrow night are actually in a weird spot because they're expected to win, which almost never happens. And they're actually going against one of the better stories of the early part of the season in the Patriots. The Patriots have surprised most.
Yeah. I also forget that you actually are a Jets fan.
Yeah. I don't wear a lot of gear, so I don't show it off.
Yeah.
Now, people will say I'm embarrassed of the Jets, but I know, you know, I just don't wear it. That's all.
Yeah.
I donned a hat last Sunday. We were out at a bar, which, by the way, I did get the Sunday tickets. I don't know if you were involved in that whole thing. It was a month of me whining about Sunday ticket and how much it cost, and I boycotted until the very end, and then the significant other was like, we're getting Sunday ticket. So she wears the pants in the family. I got it.
And that has been the biggest blessing, right?
Well, not really.
Because it is extremely frustrating.
We haven't been home to watch the games. We keep going out, like I said.
Wait, if you have Sunday ticket, are you on a specific device, like YouTube TV? Are you doing cable?
Well, you have to do YouTube TV to get it.
Okay.
And then you have to actually sign up for YouTube TV, unless there's a way around it that I don't know about. But yeah, that's my TV provider, and that's where Sunday ticket is. So I've been at home for like half the day. So
yeah,
not really paying off so far.
The best thing about YouTube TV is that you can carry it around with you on your phone.
You know what? That's a good point. I went to a bar on Sunday and they had, I think it was 5 TVs within my view. They had like 14 TVs overall. They have the package. Well, when there's 10 games in the morning, obviously you're not going to get 10 games in front of you, nor could you watch 10 games. But when I go to bars, I know the Jets traditionally have been just a dumpster fire.
Mm-hmm.
So I will meekly ask them to put on the Jets game. But if they're like, sorry, there's more important games, or a player over here wants this game, then I'm just like, okay. So I actually, to your point, I did have the phone ready to go watch the Jet game on the mini screen. You know what? If I didn't ask for it, I don't think it would have been on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went through the whole thing the other day. I think there are certain rules. And I get way too intense about this, but Sunday morning, as I'm sitting there waiting for the games to come on, I just go silent for like 15 minutes. I'm just thinking, I'm like, when is my game going to be on? Are there games I want on? Are they going to be on? My girlfriend looked at me and she's like, wow, the intensity is here. I'm like, yep, you know it.
Yeah.
You know it. And then, funny enough, Griffin, were you paying attention the other day? I know you listen to most of the show. You're here. But were you paying attention the other day when I talked about people walking into a bar with a 10:05 kickoff? They walk in at 10:01 at a crowded bar and they're like, hey, can I get my TV on this TV right in front of me? And the bartender was like, no, someone's already got that TV. 10:01.
I recall you describing just probably the worst type of people, the most inconsiderate type of people.
You know, I don't want to get too hardcore on it, but I actually, there's a football morning intensity that I get. There was a thought process. I'm like, this is an awful person. And they're probably not awful. They're just naive. Now, I will say it was a New York Giants fan, so I don't have to go off on exactly horses' asses. There's a sense of entitlement with the Giants fans. Yeah, he walked in. She's like, no, someone's watching that TV. They already got it. He's like, okay, I'll walk over to the side. Yeah, you will. Yes, you will go over there, and you'll watch on whatever TV they have it on.
Yeah.
Then on top of that, another guy, this is a good question for you, as a big Raiders follower. Another guy walks in, it's 10:13. Games are started. Local bar. He's got the Raiders game in front of him. The sound's not on. What are the rules on this one?
What are the rules on that one? I never watch the games at bars, and I will never.
I don't know what the rules officially are. If I were a bartender, I'm I'm going with someone who asked me early in the day, probably in the 9 o'clock hour, or if there is a player who plays the machines who tips me, not on that spot, but like they're a loyal player. If they want a game on, they're probably going to get the sound. But that is sort of a violation of the hometown.
Exactly.
I don't know what the name of the rule would be, but the hometown team in every other hometown. Can you imagine going to a bar in Cleveland and someone's like, yeah, I want the Giants sound on. And then Browns fans are like, wait, there's no sound? Sorry, the Giants fan got the sound. Like that, it doesn't really happen anywhere else because nowhere else operates like we do, where the moneymakers at the bars are the tabletop games, bar top games.
That's interesting. Yeah. I actually didn't know that. And I've worked in a bar before. But you could imagine if you are the bartender and someone is tipping you off to be able to hear the noise of their game, you're going to take that no matter what. But with this being Las Vegas, you would expect for the Raider games to be on in every single bar. But I would prefer to watch the games at home in my own comfort with my feet up, snacking on some Wingstop. That's like the perfect picture for me.
I'm a people person. You know that. I'm very jovial, very amicable. Okay. So we got the Raiders winning over the weekend. We got UNLV back to Friday winning and starting out 3-0 and in the top 25 for the first time ever. Aces home finale, season finale, is here. Playoffs are going to begin. What's the biggest story right now between those three in Las Vegas? Aces closing strong, and I'll add in, Asia Wilson scoring 1,000 points, first person to ever do that in the WNBA. So is it Asia and the Aces? Is it UNLV football? Is it the Raiders with a massive win over the Ravens?
It's UNLV football.
Wow.
In my opinion.
You agree?
I think so, yeah.
I'm shocked by this.
UNLV Rebel football on top of the world right now? That's big here in Las Vegas.
Here's the thing. Top 25 ranking. Since Division I, since 1978, my mother was like 7 years old, right? We have not seen UNLV football be good for a very long time. You expect the Aces to be great. You expected them to clinch their home court advantage. With the Raiders, I'm not going to lie, I didn't have high expectancy with the win against the Ravens, but I was happy, you know, from what I've seen. But the thing about the Raiders is that I think they play pretty well against very good teams, and they play pretty poorly against bad teams. That's what it was last year. That's what it was the year before that.
Yep.
With the Raiders, we need to keep seeing them win. Obviously, this upcoming week, we should expect a win. But you never know.
I love that attitude. I actually, every once in a while, I'll do Fox 5s or Silver State Sports and Entertainment, their show, Sin City Sports Beat. And one of the fellas on the show was saying, not only do the Raiders have to win against the Panthers, they got
to
pound them,
or
it's a disappointment.
Them.
I'm like, you know what? Just take a win. Just take the win.
Mm-hmm.
It might be close. These are games you have to win. I don't expect the Raiders to go out and win by 4 touchdowns. Just win the freaking game.
Yep.
Because as you said in the past, it seems like when they're, in moments of prosperity, then all of a sudden you're like, wait, they lost this one? What? Come on.
Yeah. This upcoming week's going to be very interesting. It is the first home game. So not only that, Raider fans are going to be out and alive. And the Panthers are, as you all know, going through a lot right now. They've been rebuilding for a very long time right now. We'll see what AP can do. We'll see what AP can do against this team. And many people say that he has been out-coached. So at least the past – okay, for sure against Harbaugh.
The first game,
that.
He had some bad moments. Second game, I give him credit. At halftime, whoever made the adjustments worked.
Mm-hmm.
Gangbusters in the second half. So, I mean, you knew what you were getting with AP. It's not the complete product yet as a polished coach.
Yeah.
But that's an answer to go on the road and beat the freaking Ravens and now – all of Baltimore's like, what the hell is going on?
Ooh.
We're sitting in this really awful position. Speaking of a bad position, the Rams are off to a terrible start, and it seems like half their team is down right now. They got big issues at wide receiver. We'll check in on the Rams, the Chargers, some Dodger baseball because the playoffs are on the way. Well, the Dodgers, speaking of injuries, have a starting pitching staff going into the playoffs. Arash is going to check in on Cofield and Company.
California. Mr. LA, Mr. Vegas, Arash Markazi joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, Cofield and Company back here on this Wednesday. Lots to get to, 3:40. Going to check in with Caleb Herring right here on ESPN Las Vegas. Nye is here. It's Cofield. Arash is in. What's going on, Arash?
Not much. How are you?
Good. Say hi to Nye.
What's up, Arash?
Hi, Nye. Hello.
All right, Arash. Let's get into a couple of things right out of the gates. First of all, how is the show going each night? Pimp that for the audience here in Vegas.
It's good. You know, we it's not during a set time. So, you know, I think our sweet spot is like pregame, like, you know, 6 to 7 before first tip or first pitch and stuff. Last night we did it a little bit later because I was flying back from Vegas to Los Angeles. But it's been fun. It's been fun.
Good. Big audiences. I'm sure you guys got into Vegas fight weekend. I was actually hoping that you were going to be at the Canelo fight the whole time because I saw an early picture up on Twitter at the Canelo fight, but I think you covered both of the venues. So first of all, what was the setting like at Canelo?
Well, Canelo was Canelo. I think that's why when I was trying to decide what to do, this was Canelo's 18th fight that he headlined in Vegas. So listen, he's going to do more. So no disrespect to Canelo, and I certainly, it is always a big deal when he fights. And so I wanted to be there. I also wanted to see how I could time it out when I got an idea of when Canelo was going to fight and what was happening at the Sphere. I just felt it was probably, it would behoove me to go to the Sphere. So listen, I saw the undercard at the Canelo fight, and again, sold out crowd, and I knew it would be. I think as much as we talk about the competition, and there are, you know, combat sports fans. I mean, if you're a boxing fan, if you're a Canelo fan, you went to T-Mobile. If you're a UFC fan, you went to the Sphere. But listen, I thought Canelo was great. I mean, I knew the problem with Canelo fight, he hasn't like knocked anyone out since, what is it, you know, pre-pandemic year. So I just have seen that film before. It's not a bad movie, but I didn't feel the need to see it again.
I want to talk about the boxing aspect, you're right, because a lot of people are either UFC or boxing, and I'm going to take boxing any day, every single day. And I want to talk more about the Canelo fight. I want to get your opinion on who you think would be next, right? There has been a thousand names thrown around, a rematch of Caleb Plant, David Benavidez, which everybody is obviously expecting and looking forward to, something where it's going to be a good matchup because Canelo is always favorited. Who do you think is a good matchup for Canelo up next?
Well, the Benavidez fight, I think, is what all fight fans want, and it would be a unique moment for Canelo because I would have to assume that David Benavidez would be the favorite, you know. And again, no knock on Canelo. He's had a first ballot Hall of Fame career. At some point, you do hit a wall, and I'm not saying that he has, but if I were to pick someone to win that, I think Benavidez would be my pick there. But I think, you know, the problem is, so I think we're both fight fans, so that's the fight that we want to see. The problem is there is no one who has that sort of casual fan pull like outside of Canelo right now. You know, for a little while there was Canelo and Triple G. But if you're not a fight fan, you walk around town and you say, do you know who David Benavidez is? You're not going to get the casuals to show up, I guess.
So not Bud Crawford.
I think Bud's up there. The thing that, and it's not Bud's fault because he's really tried. It's always the opponent, you know? And so Crawford's up there. I think I always get bummed out when he has a fight back in his hometown. I love the no knock on Nebraska, but like, you know, would love to see. But I don't think that fight's in the cards, though.
So this is interesting in terms of what Canelo should do, because beginning of the week, I saw people saying, bruh, you got a chance earlier in your career to get lifted up in terms of attention and money by Floyd. And in the history of boxing, older boxers have given the young guys a chance. But what you're suggesting here is none of these guys are worth his time. So is he just going to play out the string with minus 2,000 fights and then walk into the sunset in three fights, having made all his money, and at the end of his career, he's not going to fight a young great?
It's a good point. It's like, is the juice worth the squeeze, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, if he in his heart of hearts knows he's going to go into a fight that, he has the confidence he's going to win. But, you know, do you put yourself in a position to lose a fight when you're not making a ton of money? You know, like, it's not like he's going to go up against, you know, again, back in the day, Floyd. Like even if you knew you weren't going to beat Floyd, that's a massive payday, right? So there's that opponent's not out there. So while as a fight fan, I do want to see him challenge himself. I do want to see him sort of, you know, I guess like pass the torch. He doesn't have to do that. He will get to a point in his career where like he doesn't want to do this anymore. By the way, like the number surprised me. I mean, the guy's had almost 20 headline fights here in Vegas. I mean, he headlined the first big fight at T-Mobile when that place first opened up. So, I mean, he's had a hell of a career.
Arash is with us, CEO of the Sporting Tribune. All right, we move on to later in the night. You get over to the Sphere. The fights were pretty solid. I know that stylistically the last two weren't everyone's favorite. I love the main event. I was cackling the entire time. The setting, the setup, the visuals, what do you give it?
I thought it was so well done, and I knew it would be. You know, when they said the figure and there was no reason for them to lie about it, when they said it was $20 million, I said, okay, so they're going to do like a full-on production. You know, with the draft, they just use it as a projection of, you know, the team logos and highlights and things like that. I mean, they really did a full-on movie, right, of like in between fights. They had, I don't know how long it was, maybe 5 to 10 minutes or whatever, like in between the fights, you know, really showcasing all that the Sphere can do. The chairs moved and shook and things like that. I mean, I really thought it was well done. Dana had a great point. Like, we could do all this, but we can't control the fights. That being said, I thought the fights outside of the co-main event was fantastic. The co-main was what it was. I think the two combatants did what they had to do to win the title belt. So I also think anytime you have two new champions, that's a pretty cool thing to see. But two of the reasons that I don't know if they're going to go back, and I know that there's a lot of people saying, well, so Dana White said post-fight that they're not going to come back there. And the reason that I don't think he's lying is it is really hard to make up that gate. If you're talking about $20 million, they had to do over 20, which they said they did, according to them. Hard to do that consistently. They could do that one time because everyone wanted to see what the Sphere looked like.
Right.
So, I mean, that's just such a big figure, Steve. So I don't think they're going to go back. If they do, they got to bring a big name. They got to bring Jon Jones. They got to bring Conor McGregor. They got to bring someone big.
Let's be honest, too. While places like MSG, and I don't know what it's been called the last, you know, 19 sponsors, but it used to be the Felt Forum, they would have boxing there in an amphitheater with the stage. I covered NFL drafts there. Well, that building's not that big. When you get a building that pushes it to 17,000, a lot of the visuals I saw from the upper deck, I don't think you could – I mean, there were big screens, but I don't think you could see the ring very well. Boxing and MMA are made for arenas where it's plunked into the middle of the arena and there's a 360 view of it. Mm-hmm. So that would be, I think, one of the reasons. Now, the intriguing thing is Dana White started hinting at it, and I know you have a little intel on this. The UFC is in a beautiful position in Las Vegas because – while the UFC was grateful to have a regular home and partner with T-Mobile Arena, if we have another arena on the way that's 18 or 20,000 seats and maybe a third arena, and what I'm talking about are NBA projects, UFC sitting in heaven here because now there can actually be bidding to grab their fights exclusively on the ground in Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, so their contract is coming up at such a perfect time, and Dana White didn't foresee this. This really just happened. So their contract is coming up, whether it's in 25 or 26, but either way, it's aligning with the arena that the NBA team will have. And again, I know there's a lot of people out there who are saying, what about T-Mobile Arena? Well, T-Mobile Arena will be used if the new arena is not built, but the new basketball team will want its own $2 billion state-of-the-art arena that's theirs. By the way, so this is all a negotiation. In negotiation, you have to have two or more parties,
right,
involved for it to be a negotiation. And I thought it was very smart of Dana. He did not specifically say what group he's partnered with. We know that there are two groups right now. There's one on the north end of the strip. There's one on the south end of the strip. And to be honest, if I'm Dana, I'm negotiating with those two groups as well. Because the big thing that arena is going to have is dates. So if you have an NBA team, you've got at least 41, you include preseason, postseason, maybe 50 dates. You need more than that. So maybe you get UFC, maybe you get concerts, you get other things like that. But Dana White and UFC is in a prime position right now.
You're very objective, so I assume you'll be pitching strongly for the northern site to get completed and UFC to be there. So you can walk to the events.
Well, that's part of it. But Steve, it's I also want it to be generally as strip adjacent as possible. When I say that, this location, and it's not hard to see, and people can go to see it themselves, it is in between the Sahara and the Fontainebleau, convenient with the beautiful monorail, which I like to use. Listen, if you're on the south end of the strip, the only reason that that's convenient is that's the Brightline rail line, and who knows when that's going to happen and how successful that's going to be. But yes, if I had to pick one, and by the way, kudos to them. They partnered with the Intuit Dome, the developers of the Intuit Dome. That's an amazing facility. So if the new arena looks anything like the Intuit Dome, it's going to be fantastic.
We got 2 minutes, so let's spend a minute on each. First, it's a big game already for USC in the Big Ten. Michigan looks kind of weak. USC a pretty big favorite on the road. Do you expect them to go in there and just freaking roll the Wolverines?
No, but I do expect them to win. I do expect them to win. I don't expect this to be a blowout situation. If it is, fantastic. But if they can go into Michigan, and again, tough thing about USC is that Texas already went in there and won. I was really hoping USC would be the first team to snap the win streak and all that stuff. But Steve, if they go into the Big House and they get that win, now they're in the driver's seat to win the Big Ten, to be in the college football playoff, a national championship contending team. Again, this all began in Vegas when they beat Louisiana State.
Yep. Arash travels a lot. He goes to a lot of events. That's certainly one of the reasons we have him on. He's a man about the country. I've noticed that you're on a Southwest flight. You're in an exit row. There's two seats, and then there's a row of three. Daddy Longlegs on the line here. Arash got the seat, the inside seat, where you got plenty of leg room, and you were sending out the debate about that seat, the extra leg room, but also no easily available tray table, and then you have to reach, five extra feet to hit the TV.
Well, you can't reach it. I mean, so that's not even, it's not, I would have to unbuckle my seatbelt to go, and I'm not going to do that.
Dangerous.
So the feeling is, if it's a daytime flight where you're going to be watching television and consuming the screen in front of you, it's not ideal. If you're just going to sleep, it is ideal.
Oh,
so that is, if you're selecting that seat, that is, if it's a nighttime flight and you want to sleep, great. If not, I would not recommend it.
Next time you get on a flight and you have this conundrum of this beautiful seat, do me a favor and ask, once the seatbelt sign goes off, could you actually just lay on the floor and sleep?
That's a good question.
Right? I think they would say no. But then they should also police people taking their shoes off. Right? We're going to police
then
that.
That's even worse.
Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
No one wants to see your feet. I don't mean you, Arash.
I take my shoes off.
But the expectation with the ladies, I mean, in most cases, is that the feet are clean. You're not rocking talons. It's not like a Belichick foot. No one wants to see that stuff. Right, Arash?
Yeah, totally agree. But yeah, generally speaking, folks, keep the shoes on.
Exactly. Thanks, Arash. You laid down the law. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Arash.
All right, see you. Bye.
Yeah, check it out. Monday through Friday, Sporting Tribune, at Arash Markazi. They're doing about an hour and 5 minute show on LA Sports. It's really, really good. We didn't even hit on a lot of the stuff we wanted to get into. I know he'll probably talk about this again, the Chargers' decision to stay east between those games in Charlotte and Pittsburgh. Caleb Herring coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll get into Coach Prime and his tweaking, or maybe it's real anger with the media.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
were talking early in the show about biggest sports story in town. I mean, a lot of people think it's UNLV's quick start, 3-0, top 25 for the first time in the history of the school. We're going to cover that on several fronts as Caleb Herring will be in, the former Rebel quarterback. He's on the broadcast for UNLV. Jeff Grammer will be in later on from the Albuquerque Journal to talk about a lot of the conference stuff because UNLV and New Mexico, two power schools when you know the programs are rocking and rolling on the basketball side, and New Mexico's not even getting a sniff right now on the rumor mill. It doesn't mean they have no shot. And then later on, we'll get reaction on UNLV football and also take a deep divey look at the roster for Runner Rebel basketball and the schedule. Kevin Kruger is going to join us at 5:05. I mentioned something going to break, and you and I talked probably, I don't know, 5 weeks ago about travel, road trips, focus. We can that then parlay that into long trips, which now USC and UCLA have a lot of long trips, and vice versa. Like Indiana had a good length trip to go to LA and kick the living crap out of UCLA. So travel has become a thing. Cross-country travel has become more of a thing now in college football. Well, it's always been the case in a couple of spots in the NFL, and the Chargers have this rare spot where they were at Charlotte. They're going to be taking on Pittsburgh, right? So at Carolina, taking on Pittsburgh. They did not go back to LA. They stayed this week in the Northeast, whatever, Southeast, Northeast, East, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
I like it. It gives the guys a different level of focus. You're not around your family members. You're not around distractions. And the elevation of these two different states are completely different, right? So they're able to lock in on an entirely different level. And Harbaugh thinks differently, naturally. So you're going to expect him to do different things.
So Belichick thing, he did it for a while. He would, you know, if he had two games back-to-back on the West Coast, he'd plan himself somewhere. Like, actually, he was really unique because he would have the – he'd have them stay. I don't know if they stayed on the base. I don't even know if you can do that. But they'd stay at around Air Force in Colorado Springs because then they would practice that whole week at elevation, maybe get a little extra week of wind and stamina. Now, Griffin played JUCO football, and oftentimes we talk about the creature comforts of football. You, I'll use the term, bow up, and you get angry. So is this modern-day NFL player where they need to toughen up, Buttercup, or you like? Would you like to stay in one time zone the whole time and not have four flights, just two?
I think it makes more sense, and I think I would have, if I'm on the Chargers team, I prefer one, you know, as little of as minimum flight time as possible. Let's not go back to California and then go back to the East Coast. Let's stay out there. We're sacrificing time with families. It's understandable, but at the same time, Chargers are 2-0 with a new head coach and in a spot where I don't think a lot of people saw they would be going into this season. So I think it's a smart move. I think it's a move that if everybody's bought in, they're all for it.
Get down to Ellis Island every Friday night for Red Zone Riches. They give away $1,500 or more in free play every single week at 7 o'clock. You can earn unlimited entries daily by playing your favorite slots. One entry for every 200 points earned. And if you're a fan of football and free play, must attend, right? On Fridays, it's the Friday night Red Zone Riches. For more information, go to EllisIslandCasino.com.
Did you miss the arena?
Now remember, if Greg makes it, he will win. Oh, he won! Swish! Woo! Swish! Oh, wow.
Oh, my goodness. Matthew, I didn't think that was ever going to happen.
Greg with a lefty shows me how it's done. We're text. We're totally text.
I was going to say, yeah.
I'm very tired.
Jared, let me borrow your inhaler.
Listen to Greg breathing fast. Now there's 4,000 people calling the police right now.
The Arena with Greg Salerno, Wednesdays at 2. Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Landscape has changed in football. Once upon a time, you guys never attacked college players. Now they're making more money than y'all. And some of y'all are envious and jealous about that. So you're on the tech. It was hands-off a college player because he's an amateur. Remember that guy? Now it's hands-on. Go at him. Any kind of way you want. They're making more money than me, and I'm mad about it.
Oh, generalities. Not accurate. Most media members, I think, are still hesitant to attack college players, whether they're paid or not. So this is what Deion Sanders deals in, our generalities. But let's get into some of the activity after the CSU game. And then something else Deion said. I think it's pretty easy to pick up on what Deion's goals are here. And I think he believes he's fooling people, but he's not fooling anyone. Caleb Herring is with us. Caleb, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Caleb.
I'm doing good. Hey, how's it going, guys?
What'd you think of Deion saying that now it's hands-on and media people are attacking the players and they didn't used to do that and it's because of the money and they're jealous?
I think it's silly. I think it's a there's a couple of things I think. I think, one, Deion wasn't coaching very long ago. He just started coaching, so maybe he wasn't I don't think he was exposed enough to the college world and what the media actually did.
He
as
also,
far as
to point out, he had, to point out, sorry to cut you off, he had zero coverage at Jackson State.
Right. So
it's not a rip on him, but it's just different. Now you've set up this scenario where, you know, you're a lightning rod. People are going to come at you, but I don't know that it's necessarily jealousy.
Yeah, I don't think, necessarily jealousy. I think it may be, you know, a very strong disagreement with the lifestyle and what he represents. I think that's fair. It's fair to say that. And that his program and ergo his players kind of represent what he is. And there may just be a lot of dislike for that persona. And because it does break the media's conventional mode of what you're supposed to say in a press conference or how you're supposed to behave after a game and whatnot and what have you. I don't think it has very much to do with the fact that the players are getting paid. I also think that the other spin to what Deion does with the media, and especially this comment, I think he, in some ways, intentionally, whether he's, you know, just doing it for the attention for himself because he's prime time, it's mostly about him. I don't think he can put that away. And I also think it might be intentional to distract from anything that may become negative press for his son.
Yeah. Well, that too, for sure, yeah.
I think his son is kind of the target right now of the media, and I think this is a hot take that he knows is going too far, but now the news cycle will focus on that and not so much Shador and Fowler Nicolosi's beef or whatever the case may be. So I think that there's a couple of different. I don't think Deion's ignorant of what he's saying and how much of a hot take it is. I think it's either to get attention for himself or to take attention away from the negative aspects of the way his players are getting covered. And I think he's kind of mastered the manipulation of the media for his whole lifetime to his benefit. So I think this is just more of the same.
The Shador CSU quarterback exchange was real interesting, and it could have been a lot more significant. I got to tell you, and maybe I shouldn't do this, but I will. If Shador walked up on Matt Sluka and was putting his finger in his face and Will Thomas was standing there, the 6'8", 315 offensive lineman for UNLV, and I'm pointing out if there was a CSU lineman nearby, do you think that exchange would have gone the same?
Oh, boy.
There's a recipe for disaster there.
That's tough to say, I think, because I, in the heat of the moment, or at least when the context behind it, I think everybody kind of understood what that moment was. And I think other players, even teammates, would have probably, you know, put that in context as opposed to, you know, Deion or Shador is not just coming up picking a fight with my guy. Shador's clapping back. And I think, you know, there's parts of that I say, you know, players would have just let it ride and let it happen, just like I guess CSU players did. So I don't know for sure. And I think that there is a competitive context where I think Fowler Nicolosi kind of did the right thing in that moment where he just, like, kind of took that, like, okay, Shador could have took the high road and, you know, shook his hand after. But it's one of those, I dished it, now I got to accept it. You know, he did kind of just show me on the field that I'm not, you know, or in his words, you're not that guy, you're not like that, whatever. So I don't completely disagree with Shador and the way he acted. I don't, you know, personally, not my way of, you know, getting get back. But I think that contextualized kind of that exchange, and I think everybody kind of understood it from the player's perspective as it happened.
Griffin, give me Deion 2 from the press conference.
I know you're going to do your job and what you must do, but your job does not attack. The personal stuff, leave it to be personal, because if we start flipping the script on y'all, you wouldn't like it. I can ease it. Thank you, Lord, for stopping me that day. Ooh, that was almost a good one. That would have went viral.
Kind of funny, but kind of ridiculous, because Deion was just going personal 2 days ago. So God didn't stop him in that case. I find Deion kind of duplicitous. I'm not a man of faith like you are, Caleb, but I think he kind of slips in and out of Pastor Deion when he feels it's necessary.
Yeah, I think there are definitely examples of his, you know, his faith or his personal belief structure that I think are admirable. And then there's moments that I don't think he puts him on the forefront. And I've had a couple of, there's a while ago where he kind of blasted one of the reporters for, I guess, a black reporter for changing up the way he talks when he was on air versus when he was in private. And that was just a distasteful moment. It's just one of the examples in his long history that he does that. And that particular bite, my issue with Deion at this point is the line between what's personal and what's not, because there's a lot of things that he says or that Shador does or that his players do that could be considered personal. And there's a lot of the media coverage that is covering the team that he's saying is personal, but you could really look through it, and there's a lot of gray in what's personal or not. Like, saying your team's performing badly and that your coaching methods don't work at this level isn't really a personal attack. That's an angle that maybe you take personally, and that's, you know, the idea of, is it offensive versus are you offended? And that's what I think Deion, he finds himself on that line a lot, where it's like, he's offended by whatever was written about him, so that makes it personal. Whereas the person who writes it doesn't have the right to say personal things if it, you know, if it's relevant to the story. And Deion kind of polices that, at least attacks it publicly. And I don't think that that's fair for the media. There is a lot of personal stories that make their way into the narrative that the media covers. Shador and his watch celebration, that might be a personal thing, or, you know, the TV show or Facebook, whatever, the social media series that Deion has. You can argue that that's a lot. That's you're putting your personal self out there. So for the media and sports to cover it, you can't really go both ways and say you're not allowed to be personal. But, you know, I digress. It's polarizing is what Deion Sanders is. He's got a lot of fans, a lot of supporters, and then there's just as much reason to be a detractor and somebody that, I guess, quote unquote, attacks him in the media.
Yeah, Caleb, it's kind of like a pick and choose type of scenario of when and who it specifically is being attacked, right? Because in my opinion, media is allowed to have their opinions no matter what. That's the job of a person who works in media. Once an athlete becomes professional, right? And this is what NIL has become. You become a professional. They're getting paid to do their jobs. So to be honest, it's fair game for criticism no matter what. Where's the accountability with that, right? Because his sons get criticism, his players get criticism, but there's no accountability.
Yeah, I think the accountability will come in time because, as every coach knows, eventually the win-loss column catches up to you. And right now I think Deion and what Colorado is such a marketable thing that they haven't suffered financially for not, you know, winning on the field. And as long as they're selling out games, I don't think his job or, you know, his coaching status will be in jeopardy. And I think he'll be gone from Colorado before that becomes a problem. So he's playing with house money, essentially. So I don't know that he ever will be held accountable. And when you think about it, that's been the case for his whole career, right? Like, since he's always been good enough at football and marketable enough to where he's going to bring in money. And in a capitalist society, you can get away with a lot when you exist in that realm. And I think Deion is that. I think he's one of those guys that has surpassed the normal rules for how people exist and how they behave. And it's not always bad. I think I'm a fan of Deion, and I'm a fan of what he has done for the most part in his role as a college football coach. But there is that point where you're like, okay, you're setting unrealistic expectations for the rest of us. You're something that we can't emulate. And what kind of example are you setting for the next generation? When, you know, Shador, right now, he's okay. He has kind of a hedge of protection with you as his dad. But if he gets to the next level, and God forbid, he turned into Bryce Young, will he be equipped to deal with it? I don't think he's done the best job, at least what I see publicly. I don't know about the private life of Deion and Shador, but what I see publicly, I don't think he's prepared, you know, the best that he could, his team, to deal with adversity and accountability and the consequences of when things aren't going your way.
I'll go back to the beginning of this. I do think there is, and always has been, members of the media who are jealous of athletes. So I'm not saying there's zero jealousy that's going into some of the criticism of Deion and Shador. So I'll leave that there. Deion is good for college football because win or lose, he's going to have something to say. I still think they're going to have a season where they go 4-8. But he delivers numbers. Colorado CSU got $3.25 million. UNLV Kansas had a good number on a Friday night on ESPN, $1.32 million. So UNLV's top 25 first time in school history. Now it's time to kind of deal with focus in the off week. Did you like when Odom was talking about putting up the visual of rat poison?
I did. I don't know if rat poison was the analogy I would have gone with. And so, you know, every coach has their own way to deliver that message. But I think the message applied. And as long as his guys receive it, that's the important part. I think the message is right on point. Like, the success sometimes is a little bit of a poison. And it can be a distraction to your ultimate goal because, you know, happiness and along the way could give you a sense of complacency in the wrong spots, not realizing you're still in a war. Like, you won a battle, you've reached a milestone, but the war's not over and you got to keep going. So that's a little bit of what his message was. And I think the guys received it. And from what we see from the players, you know, you and I are around them more than the average person. And we've seen that laser focus, that single-minded focus even before they got into the top 25. So I think this is the right group, to handle. This is a mature group. There's a lot of senior leadership in that locker room. So I think they are all, focus on bigger goals than just cracking the top 25. They really want that Mountain West Championship. They want the revenge tour. There's a couple teams that they got get back on their mind, Fresno State being one of them. So I think they're going to be focused. I think that the message from Odom was right on point.
Caleb, I know you obviously focus on UNLV a lot. You had stated a comment on Twitter the other day that I really needed some clarity on, because you said you got the word termed as being a part of the media. But you didn't like that. What did that mean?
Oh man, so I've straddled a line for a long time, and I've tried to stay former player as my title. I don't participate in, you know, the everyday activities of media. I don't try to chase narratives. I don't follow stories. I try to be even keel. I go as far as not doing predictions. I don't try to break news. None of that is my desire for my role. I wanted to stay close to the game of football. Calling games and doing commentary on it is one of those things that I'm able to do. But then, you know, I've slowly, gradually kind of been morphing into a media figure where I have opinions on sports and people are looking for my opinion from sports. I don't know that I necessarily think it's a badge of honor to be considered. I'm just a guy with some knowledge of sports who likes to talk about it and can formulate an opinion pretty clearly, I guess, and that lands me in the media box. But I strove for this long, however many years I've been out of the game, to remain a former player, and I was finally addressed for the first time, or at least tagged in a post, as a member of the media, and what my job was to do as a media member. And I was just like, wow. Well, what have I done? Why? What? How did I get here? But no, here I am. I'm contributing to the media, so I guess if it sticks, it sticks.
Well, your takes on food make you a member of the media. So I got like 20 seconds left. You want to give a quick synopsis of why Kansas City barbecue is better than Texas barbecue?
There's so much, and I could go so far in depth. And I really just want to say, you know, the pink ring. Those that barbecue understand what I'm talking about. The sign of perfection. I saw it multiple times in Kansas City. Texas is really great food. But I think the barbecue discussion is one to nothing as far as Missouri, Kansas City area compared to Texas barbecue. I am a lifelong believer now in Kansas City barbecue. I will be back for more.